This is Free Thought Radio with your hosts, Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us, only sky.
All you heathens and heretics across America, I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And hello, all you blasphemers, all you true Americans. I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist.
Welcome to Free Thought Radio, the Freedom From Religion Foundation's weekly broadcast, and your antidote to the domination of our public airwaves by the religious right.
And blasphemy, by the way, is a victimless crime, so we should be proud to be blasphemers. The show is produced by the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest organization of freethinkers. We use that word freethinker to refer to atheists and agnostics and other types of non-believers, irreligious and such. We work to keep religion and government strictly separate and to educate the public about the views of those of us who are none of the above, the atheists, the agnostics, the non-believers.
Our guest today, who will be joining us in the second half of Free Thought Radio, will be Joanne Bell. She's director of the ACLU of Oklahoma. Joanne got into the state church arena when religion obtruded itself into her local public schools in a very ugly way. She was roughed up. Her house was arsoned as her litigation continued. This was in the 1980s.
And we'll be talking with Joanne about her experiences and about a decision that just came down in favor of the ACLU of Oklahoma, about a Ten Commandments monument on public property in that state.
And we're going to be parsing President Obama's landmark speech in Cairo last week and analyzing his use of religion in a minute.
But first, we want to pause for this non-commercial advertisement of the upcoming 32nd Annual National Convention of the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
It's taking place in downtown Seattle at the Red Lion Hotel on the first weekend of November.
And just this last week, we got word that the great science fiction writer Ursula K. Le Guin, author of such classics as The Left Hand of Darkness, she will be there to accept the Foundation's Emperor Has No Clothes Award, and that's pretty exciting. Ursula Le Guin terms herself irreligious.
And we're really pleased that Air America host Ron Reagan, who lives in Seattle, will also be speaking. And Ron is an unabashed atheist, as he says, and we've interviewed him before on Free Thought Radio. He was a doubter at a very early age and never hid that fact from his conservative parents.
You mean Ronald and Nancy Reagan.
So Ron Reagan has a lot of intellectual integrity, and we're looking forward to meeting him.
And other speakers will be there at our convention, whom you may have gotten a little acquainted with through interviews on our show on Free Thought Radio. We have a really upbeat convention coming up. Lots of good news. The distinguished researcher Barry Cosman, who is a principal investigator of the American Religious Identification Survey, showing that the non-religious are at 15% of the U.S. adult population. We cite that number a lot on Free Thought Radio, and Barry Cosman also directs the Institute for the Study of Secularism in Society and Culture at Trinity College. He'll be talking about the rising tide of secularity in the United States.
Sociologist Phil Zuckerman, who's author of Society Without God, which looked at the happiness index in Scandinavian countries among the least religious countries, will be talking about the goodness of godlessness.
And we talked with Phil on the show a few months ago. Also, someone else we talked with, William Lobdell, formerly the religion writer for the Los Angeles Times, who lost his faith covering religion, especially the pedophilia scandals and many other religious issues. He will be receiving one of our Emperor Has No Clothes Awards and signing copies of his new book, his memoir, Losing My Religion. His speech will be free at last.
And we've also booked Jennifer Hecht, who's the poet and author of the impressive work Doubt, A History, The Great Doubters and Their Legacy of Innovation. And we'll keep you posted on additions to this very fine lineup. And you can register online or find out more info at ffrf.org/events. And I might say we're publicizing this event early because the ballroom is limited to about 550 people, and we know we'll be turning people away in the fall. So if you want to be assured of a seat, register early.
And now we turn to President Barack Obama's Cairo speech that he gave to the Muslim world and our reaction and some of the reaction of others. Politico.com ran one story earlier this week pointing out that in 5 months' time, Obama has invoked Jesus more than Bush did in 8 years. Politico mentioned Obama's May 17th speech to the University of Notre Dame, which Free Thought Radio analyzed in some detail. Politico also pointed to what it called Obama's Sermon on the Mount speech at Georgetown University, where in making the case for his economic policies, Obama retold the story of two men who built their house on a pile of sand and one who built his on a rock, of course, an allusion to the New Testament.
And it's good to know that there are other observers who've been troubled, as we have been on Free Thought Radio, with some of the gratuitous religion, including the fact that religious leaders are meeting with White House policymakers on a regular basis. Obama's Cairo speech was vetted, for example, by several quote-unquote faith leaders, and Obama appointed the 26-year-old Pentecostal minister, I've forgotten his name now, Jason something or other, to run his Office of Faith-Based and Neighborhood Partnerships.
Politico.com quotes U.S. Representative Pete Stark, a Democrat from California, and by the way, the only openly non-religious member of Congress, who is expressing his concern. Stark told Politico, "Underneath it all, Obama is a pretty standard Christian, go-by-the-book kind of person." Stark said the religion in the White House is probably not constitutional.
And we agree, but currently the U.S. Supreme Court has ruled against the right of Americans to challenge faith-based offices in the White House, as Dan and I painfully know personally, as two of the named plaintiffs in our lawsuit that went before the U.S. Supreme Court on this issue in the Bush years.
Now, around the country, atheists and agnostics and other freethinkers have generally been giving our current president the benefit of the doubt. But there is, as we have said, a whole lot of religion going on in Obama's speeches. And let's look at some of the content of Obama's June 4th speech at Cairo University last week.
And first, this was a truly historic occasion. It was a very thoughtful speech, and Obama did not shy away from some hot-button issues. And I appreciated especially that Obama called the education of women a human rights issue. And he stood up a little bit. There was some welcome lip service, for example, about Palestinian rights.
Obama, of course, tailored his speech to his audience, so we had a lot of Quran quoting going on.
As the Holy Quran tells us, be conscious of God and speak always the truth.
So be conscious of God. We do have to point out that God is make-believe. Religion, as Aldous Huxley put it, is a consciously accepted system of make-believe. And I guess I don't like our president quoting the Quran any better than I like him quoting the Bible.
And I believe that America holds within her the truth that regardless of race, religion, or station in life, all of us share common aspirations to live in peace and security, to get an education and to work with dignity, to love our families, our communities, and our God. These things we share. This is the hope of all humanity.
Well, if only the president had stopped before he came to that reference to the fact that we all share love of our God, because that was a nice sentiment up until then. And of course,
because whose God is it, right?
Right. There isn't an our God, because the various major religions are all at war with each other over having the one true God and the one true faith. And so it was a very nice thought there, but I think that adding God to it is what makes it so divisive. And of course, by saying this is something that all humanity shares, this does exclude non-religious people. And we are the second largest, I believe, is it the second or third in the world population, the non-religious, are nobody to ignore.
And besides that, our God, the God of Islam, is totally different God from the God of Christianity. The God of Christianity has a son, and in Islam, God has no son, so it's a totally different deity. This is a theme in the Cairo speech, this delusional idea, really, that religion is somehow peacemaking or peaceful. Here's another clip that sounds this theme.
We can't disguise hostility towards any religion behind the pretense of liberalism. In fact, faith should bring us together.
I think the very fact that Obama or public figures have to make statements like that to kind of go way overboard to say, hey, our faith brings us together, underscores the fact that historically faith has divided us. Faith has caused wars. Faith has dropped bombs and flown planes into buildings. Faith is a 30 years war between Protestants and Catholics. I think he is protesting or peacefully protesting too much here.
The enduring faith of over a billion people is so much bigger than the narrow hatred of a few. Islam is not part of the problem in combating violent extremism.
Went on to say it is an important part of promoting peace.
And, you know, I mean, of course the world, major world religions are a part of the problem. I realize probably that wouldn't be something that he could say, but why does the president go out his way to say that it isn't a part of the problem in violent extremism? I mean, more people have been killed in the name of a god or gods than for any other reason. And obviously today our world is shattered by these religious wars. So, you know, it sounds nice. I just don't buy it. And then before we get to some of the remarks that I like better, this was the president's grand finale. And this takes about a minute of holy talk.
The Holy Quran tells us, O mankind, we have created you, male and a female, and we have made you into nations and tribes so that you may know one another. The Talmud tells us the whole of the Torah is for the purpose of promoting peace. The Holy Bible tells us, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. The people of the world can live together in peace. We know that is God's vision. Now that must be our work here on earth. Thank you. And may God's peace be upon you. Thank you very much.
Yes, we do all want peace, of course. But I think Obama doesn't realize that when these holy books are talking about peace, it means something totally different from let's get along in spite of our differences. In the Bible, as one of our guests, Hector Avalos, pointed out before, the word peace in the Bible is a military term. It means pacification. Wasn't there a missile that was nicknamed the Peacekeeper? Because you have peace when your enemies are subdued. That's what peace means in these holy books.
And, you know, this idea that this is God's vision and we know it and now we have to do what God says. Well, this is very dangerous to turn your mind over to what you think is a higher authority telling you to do things. So I understand why he did this, but it just was an awful lot of pandering.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor for Free Thought Radio. We're parsing the president's latest big speech, his historic speech at the University of Cairo last week. Coming up, we'll play some more nuanced clips that we prefer.
Hi, my name is James Hubble. I'm from Springfield, Missouri, and I'm on Free Thought Radio.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you.
In olden days, a glimpse of stockings was looked down as something shocking. Now, heaven knows, anything goes.
And that's Ella Fitzgerald singing the Cole Porter song, Anything Goes, in observance of Cole Porter's June birthday. He was born on June the 9th, 1891, and he was an out-of-the-closet atheist as well as a fairly out-of-the-closet gay man.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor here with Dan Barker for Free Thought Radio, and we're finishing a discussion about religion in the new president's speeches. Politico carried some articles showing that President Obama has referred to Jesus Christ in the last couple of months more than President Bush did in 8 years of office.
And we'll finish up with some clips that we find a little more uplifting from Obama's speech in Cairo.
America is not and never will be at war with Islam.
Now, this was an important reassurance to give the Arab and Muslim world. And at least we have on record that the U.S. administration at present doesn't have a religious crusade in mind, and that is refreshing.
And I want to particularly say this to young people of every faith in every country. You, more than anyone, have the ability to reimagine the world, to remake this world.
To reimagine, that kind of sounds a bit like John Lennon's Imagine. And Obama might know that the current generation of young people is the least religious generation we have ever had.
There's one rule that lies at the heart of every religion, that we do unto others as we would have them do unto us. It's a belief that pulsed in the cradle of civilization and that still beats in the hearts of billions around the world. It's a faith in other people.
Well, I think it's really stretching it to say that a faith in a God is where we get the idea that we have faith in humankind. Because in most religions, the heart of the religion is that we don't have faith in other people. We only put our faith in a God. And Emma Goldman had a great statement where she said, "I don't believe in God, but I believe in humankind." And I think that is an idea that maybe religious
liberals believers
have come to adopt. But it's not an idea found in the Bible or in the Quran or any holy book. It's an idea that I think should be credited to the Enlightenment,
but
and to freethinkers and humanism.
It's still a good idea to hear.
Yeah, still nice to hear.
We are shaped by every culture, drawn from every end of the earth, and dedicated to a simple concept, e pluribus unum, out of many, one.
So that was music to my ears, and we do have this very secular, very American concept that we do need to we could import to the rest of the world
or export
to the rest of the world. And the world doesn't need any more religion. They really don't need any preaching from a president in the United States. The world's full of religion. We don't need any more religious platitudes, but we could export the idea of e pluribus unum. This is the original motto of the United States. From many come one, and that is something to be proud of.
And it doesn't mean united we stand. E pluribus unum means divided we stand. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor for Free Thought Radio. We'll be back after the break for the second half of Free Thought Radio to talk with a good state church activist, Joanne Bell, who is the executive director of the ACLU of Oklahoma. She'll talk about what it's like to work for state church separation in that state.
I'm Michael Newdow, and this is Free Thought Radio.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor for Free Thought Radio. And we have on the phone with us Joanne Bell, who's the director of the ACLU of Oklahoma Foundation. Welcome to Free Thought Radio, Joanne.
Thank you, Dan. I'm happy to be a part of your show.
Yeah, it's about time. And now, Joanne, the ACLU of Oklahoma has had a terrific victory in the last week. And why don't you tell us all about it?
Sure. Briefly, we have had a case going since 2005. We had a citizen come forth from Haskell County, Stigler, Oklahoma, which is towards the eastern part of the state near Arkansas. And the county commissioners of Haskell County had voted to allow a Ten Commandments monument on the courthouse lawn. The monument was paid for by donations after another citizen of Stigler had come forth and said the Lord had put it upon his heart to put a monument on the front lawn. And so, therefore, he was a lay minister and a construction worker, and so they voted unanimously to allow, the county commissioners, five of them, voted unanimously with a lot of citizens' support to allow the monument on the courthouse lawn. And, of course, we had people come forth objecting to this, and so we took the case in 2005 and lost in federal district court in eastern Oklahoma.
Now, you were telling me that usually you do lose in federal district court in Oklahoma.
Anything to do with religious freedom or separation of church and state, we never win in Oklahoma and have to go to the circuit.
Which is the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals in Denver, right?
Yes, correct. And we actually had a judge who was a GWB appointee, and he not only ruled against us, but he was very harsh in his decision, and just really a harsh decision, and then published his decision, which, of course, now that the Tenth Circuit has reversed and remanded, they're obligated to publish the decision, which makes us really happy. But we did get a hearing before the Tenth Circuit. We appealed, and we went to arguments. I think it was October of 2007, so it's taken a while.
Oh, yeah, you've been waiting a long time.
We've been waiting, and, of course, we felt like they were waiting for a ruling, you know, because we had the Van Orden and the McQuarrie case before the U.S. Supreme Court, and we felt like they were waiting. So when they came in with the ruling on Monday, we were, I will have to say I was not shocked at the victory. I was there for the oral arguments, and we had such good representation there with our attorneys, and I was not shocked at the victory. I think a lot of people were, because the three-judge panel consisted of three more GWB appointees. So,
what was the decision, unanimous, or was it?
It was unanimous.
Wow!
And of course, the decision reads that the average observer would see by the Ten Commandments on the lawn there at the courthouse that the county of Stigler is endorsing a certain religion. So it was a really clear-cut, very precise decision, so we're very happy about that. We expect the other side to appeal, but at this point, I think that we can declare victory. I don't think the Supreme Court will take cert on that.
No, I don't think they would, because you mentioned there were two decisions, the Van Orden decision
and
the McCreary. And Van, were those 07 or 06?
I think they were 07. One was 06 and one was 07.
They were handed down on the same day.
Well, 07.
And of course, it was such a terrible thing, because the Van Orden decision said it was okay to put a Ten Commandments monument at on the grounds of the Capitol in Austin, Texas. But it wasn't okay to have them inside the courthouse in McCreary County, mm-hmm. Kentucky. And it was Breyer who was swing vote. Do you remember that? And that was such a shock.
Yes, it was kind of like the plastic reindeer case in the Texas case, I think. And plus the fact that monument had been there for 40 years, you know, kind of like some of the religious figurines carved in the Supreme Court in Washington, D.C. After a while, they became maybe artwork or, you know, the thinking of some people is that
a museum, they call it.
Well, right. I thought that was a real stretch, because they'd had other monuments. They said it was like a museum, and therefore it wasn't an endorsement. Now, I think that was a terrible decision, so I think it's all the more great that you got a victory out of the Tenth Circuit, given the Van Orden decision.
And there was
decision.
An adjoining county this morning, LaFleur County, which is just south of Haskell County, had already raised the funds and were preparing to plant another monument, and now they have called it off. So.
You said you were not shocked at the decision, but isn't it nice? It's kind of delicious to win a constitutional lawsuit, isn't it?
Well, you know, being right smack in the middle of the Bible Belt here, you know, I've been doing this job for 22 years, and we just have so many of these kinds of things happen. So to have a decision from basically what I'm sure the other side were really pleased at the panel, and they thought it was going to be a smackdown,
mm-hmm.
You know, to have this kind of a victory unanimous for a case from Oklahoma, it is really a sweet victory. But our arguments were so sound and so solid, and I just get gut feelings about things when I hear, because I do observe in court a lot, and I just felt we had a victory the day of the oral arguments, but the other attorneys said, well, we have to wait and see, and of course we did. So.
Well, and then this has been especially eagerly anticipated victory, because there in Oklahoma you have another problem.
The state legislature.
And many of our members in Oklahoma, as you know, have been contacting us concerned about this new law that was passed. Why didn't you talk about it?
Sure. It's the same, what I like to refer to as the age-old political game. We have a member of the state legislature who's planning supposed to run for governor, and he's new and newly elected, and his one agenda item was to get a law passed to place the Ten Commandments in front of the state capitol in Oklahoma City. Well, of course it passed, because we just really have a really hard time out there this session because of the makeup of both the House and the Senate. And then our Democratic governor, even though we informed our governor that he was probably going to have some support when this decision came down, he did not wait, and he went ahead under pressure and signed the bill. And so after November 1, they're planning on another planning session out there and you know, to put another monument. But the Attorney General of Oklahoma, who today has announced his own candidacy for governor, was quoted in today's paper as saying that what they're planning to do at the state capitol would fall under the Haskell County decision, so I think he's advising them not to do it. But that'll be a wait and see.
So what does? But if it's been passed and signed into law, then what would they have to do to stop it?
They have to repeal it, you know, when they open session, I think. I think that would be the next process.
Or can't the executive just issue an order?
Probably.
You know, to enjoin it from being erected?
I would think they could probably do that.
Well, that is absolutely terrific news, because the last thing we need is another 10 commandments on Capitol grounds.
You know, to just think about all of the maneuvering and the bearing of false witness and the cheating and everything that goes on where, you know, behind where the monument would be, that's sickening.
It is rather hypocritical.
Yeah, well, and you know, in Haskell County, they said they wanted the 10 commandments there because they have jail inmates on the third floor, and they wanted them to be able to look down every day and read, "Thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not murder." So they wanted them to be able to see that. However, the placement of the monument was facing out, so the people in jail could not see that, and there was a church across the street that offered a place for the monument, so it would be facing the prisoners, but they didn't want to do that.
Or put a monument that just reiterates the laws of the state. It's wrong to steal. It's wrong to kill, right?
Exactly.
Right. Well, and probably most of those prisoners, if, you know, the statistics bear up in Oklahoma, are already born again.
Oh, yeah.
They probably have already heard all this stuff.
Exactly. Yes. And you know, we all know that once they get in jail, everybody gets converted.
Jailhouse conversions are
a
dime a dozen. Well, and then, Joanne, I think it would be nice. We about to take a break, but maybe we could start the story that started you on your path to being the director of the ACLU of Oklahoma.
Be happy to.
And that was, tell us, when did that, when did your lawsuit begin?
1981. It's been a while, but it's like it was yesterday.
Well, why don't we set the scene before we go for our break?
In 1981, I became a church state plaintiff in Oklahoma because there were religious, and again, it was the good Lord appearing to a teacher saying, "Save the students of this school," and supposedly a 12-foot Jesus walked through an 8-foot door frame or 10-foot door frame and advised her to start church services at the school. So I objected to that because I had 3 children in the school, and that set the stage for me going to the ACLU, which I'd never even really been involved with the ACLU prior to that.
And tell me again, which school district was it?
It was Little Axe.
That's right, Little Axe, Oklahoma. Well, there's quite a story about what happened to you, and we'll come right back from this break. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor with Dan Barker talking to Joanne Bell about defending state church separation in Oklahoma.
Hi, my name is Jeffrey Mark from Cincinnati, Ohio. I'm the author of the book Christian No More, and I'm on Free Thought Radio.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We're concluding our conversation with the feisty Joanne Bell, who's the director of the ACLU of Oklahoma Foundation, who will be speaking at the upcoming Lake Hypatia 4th of July Bash, which is sponsored by the Alabama Free Thought Association, which is a chapter of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. And if you're interested in going to that, you can get more information. Go to the Lake Hypatia Advance link at our homepage, ffrf.org.
So, Joanne, you were telling us before the break that you were a mother of 3 in Little Axe, Oklahoma, and one of your teachers got religion and started arranging prayer sessions. And when did these occur?
They started in the fall of 1980. And when I first heard about them, and by the way, I had 4 children, but only 3 in that particular school. The other one was already in another high school. When I first heard about these, it was because my children were coming home and asking questions, because what they were being told was different than the way they had been brought up. And so I started going to school board meetings, and my thoughts were, all I have to do is, maybe they don't know about the First Amendment and the separation of church and state, so I just really was naive thinking that I could just inform them and they would stop what they were doing. And
oh, thank you very much. We didn't realize that.
Yes, I thought they would even thank me. And they would wait and sometimes make the citizens part of the school board until they would carry on things till after midnight to try to wait me out, and I would be the only one there. So this went on for months, and finally the president of the school board said, we are going to have these meetings. They were called the Sunshine Club, S-O-N-S-H-I-N-E. Mm. We're going to have these meetings, Ms. Bell, and if you don't like it, I would suggest you call the ACLU.
So famous last words.
Yeah, famous last words. And so I did, and I had heard of the ACLU, but was not a member, not involved. And the ACLU took my case and tried to reason this out first with the school district, and they really dug their heels in. And by the time I first started objecting, I started getting hate mail and threats. And I was kind of new to the community. I'd only been there just a few years, 2 or 3 years, and everybody else was the second and third generation. And the threats deepened, and the more threats I got, the more determined I was not to allow them to do this and intimidate people. There were other people objecting, but when it came down to it, it was just myself and another mother who became plaintiffs. And we finally had to bring a lawsuit in May of 81. And a week after the lawsuit was filed, I received a phone call that there was a bomb at the school, and my kids would be killed along with all the other children. So, you know, if you're a mother, Annie Laurie, you know, you would hear something like that, you would go immediately to the school where your child is, which is what I did. And when I went to the school, I was attacked by a school employee, physically attacked, and had a concussion. A lot of my hair pulled out. It was an attack that seemed to go on forever because she was about 4 times my size, and I was just trying to get away to see where my children were. She was charged with assault, but the school held a benefit softball game and paid her legal fees and my medical bills.
Did she lodge the phone call that got you to the school?
It was the Justice Department ultimately got involved, and there was a lot of investigation, but they didn't really release a lot of things. In fact, they didn't release, and then in September, of course, as you know, my house was firebombed and burned to the ground.
This was September 81?
Yes, 4 months after filing the lawsuit, and the Justice Department, I even had my own agent assigned to me to kind of help take care of me. And so the Justice Department, after many, many years of urging, 2 years later, finally released that it was arson because the firebomb happened when we were gone. And so basically we ended up homeless, and my kids were, I felt, in danger. So we moved to a town 11 miles away to get away, and then the school district tried to have the lawsuit dismissed on grounds that I had abandoned my home after it was burned. But the judge said that renegade justice should not prevail and that the lawsuit should go forward. But the upshot was it took 6 years to litigate this, and we won and we prevailed and were awarded, I think at this point still, maybe the highest paid damages to a civil rights plaintiff in the United States. I'm not sure.
Did it replace your house?
No.
So it wasn't even...
But today you are the director of the ACLU
of
Oklahoma.
And so because ACLU of Oklahoma at that time was very small, my attorney was a sole practitioner, and he is the attorney, one of them on the Haskell County case. So he's still here, and we work together daily. But I had to basically help him and volunteer. I even did process serving on that, my own process serving, to sue the plaintiffs, to the defendants. So I was involved with my case from day one and became a volunteer with the ACLU. And in 1987, I became an employee, and then I became a full-time employee. And then in 1990, I became the director. So that's how come I am at the ACLU. And it seems like constantly since then, it's been one religious freedom case after another, a First Amendment case. And I talk to the potential plaintiffs and try to explain that there could be trauma and lots of drama, and to be prepared for that because, we do have to protect our plaintiffs in Oklahoma. No one knows that better than me.
Yeah.
You have the credibility, and you've paid your dues, obviously.
I did trial by fire.
Uh-huh. Right. Now, I think we only have about a minute left, but there was a Bible, you were telling us about the Bible man, the one
we had a case
that
where,
you did win at the district level.
Yes, we did. And we had a Bible man going into elementary school, kindergarten through fourth grade, and I went as an observer, and they didn't know I was from the ACLU, and actually listened to a Bible lesson. It was around Christmas, and he was talking about Mary being pregnant, and he said back then they would stone a woman to death for being pregnant and unmarried.
Boy.
And then he said, maybe we should do that now.
And so you won that case, and
yes,
got him out of the schools, and that's a terrific victory.
That was called the Bible Man case.
The Bible Man case, that's right. And so you can come and hear more about Joanne Bell at the July 4th event at Lake Hypatia, FFRF.org events.
In Alabama.
Find out more about it in Alabama. And we're looking forward to seeing you again in person, Joanne. And thank you so much for joining us today and for everything you do.
Thank you very much. See you in a few weeks.
Yep.
All right.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. That concludes our show. We also want to thank our engineer, Dan Ginsberg. If you want to hear all of our past shows, go to ffrf.org/radio.
And join FFRF. Call 1-800-335-4021 to join or get more information. Go to ffrf.org to request a sample issue of our newspaper, Free Thought Today. And we invite you to tune in next week. We're going to be talking next week with Pat Cleveland. She was supposed to be on this week, but we changed, about the Alabama Free Thought Association event. And we'll be back next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.